What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics, open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth, and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Welcome, everyone, to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm so happy that you joined us here today. I'm excited because today we have Katie Vernon from Brandon Hall School with us, and we will be talking about the power of education. And after Katie and I talk, there will also be a transformative meditation at the end of the show, so please stay tuned for that. But now, before I introduce Katie, I'd like to open the show with a quote from Nelson Mandela. And he said, "Education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world." Wow. So this is a really, I love this quote. And there are two parts to this quote. First, that education is the most powerful weapon. And second, that it can be used to change the world. So let's look at this for a moment. Education is a tool, and it trains the mind, body, and spirit. It is what molds each of us actually into our full potential. It makes us whole, bestows confidence, understanding, and creativity. And education can reveal those treasured gems that lay within each person and bring these treasures out for all the world to see and to benefit from. And the second part of that quote is that the educated person can change the world. Now we see this, you know, when a person has knowledge and self-worth, she or he can be a powerful force of change. And in fact, the United Nations, you know, I talk sometimes about these sustainable development goals that were just created in the fall of 2015 for the goals to be completed by 2030, and there's 17 of them, and number four sustainable development goal actually is about quality education. It says that the world needs to ensure inclusive and equitable quality education and promote lifelong learning opportunities for all. So we know that rapid change can happen, particularly when women and girls are educated. We've seen this in a lot of developing countries when girls and women have an opportunity to be educated, that their entrepreneurship opportunities increase. They start businesses. They actually bring in money for their family. Their fertility rates decline and the health of children improve. And in fact, the UNESCO data indicate that educated females earn more money with which to support their families and contribute more to their communities and their community's economic growth. Indeed, educating girls can transform whole communities. So Nelson Mandela was correct here that indeed, if we want to achieve a world that with free universal education for all by 2030, then if that happens, we are definitely well on the way to achieving peace in the world. So education is so important, and I'm so happy to have our guest today that is all about education, and we're going to have a great time talking about this. This is Katie Vernon, and she works at the Brandon Hall School, which is a preparatory school here in Atlanta, Georgia. She is a scientist. She teaches in the science department, and she's also wears a lot of hats at the school. She's the varsity girls basketball head coach. She's also the science Olympiad coach, and she's also putting together, coordinating this new inaugural event at Brandon Hall called Spark Talks. And we'll talk about that in a minute. That's S-P-A-R-K Talks. And it's very exciting. That's happening here in March of 2016. So I want to welcome you, Katie. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for inviting me, Gail. It's really exciting to get to talk to you about Brandon Hall and kind of the work I do and Spark Talks and all that wonderful stuff.
So give us the website where the people can find out about Brandon Hall.
So our web address for Brandon Hall is just brandonhall.org, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, Hall, two L's, .org.
Great. Excellent. So tell us a little bit. Well, first of all, I guess I want to ask you, what drew you to the Brandon Hall School?
Well, shortly after, or I guess towards the end of grad school, I was kind of slowly realizing that my best days were the days I got to be in the lab teaching. So I was a graduate assistant that was teaching introductory biology labs to freshmen and sophomores mostly. And those were my favorite times of day. When I wasn't doing that, I was in a lab by myself doing research, which was fun and interesting, but it didn't spark my interest and my curiosity as much as teaching these labs. So as I was starting to graduate, my now husband and I were looking to move. He was transferring to Georgia Tech to pursue physics. I was kind of looking for maybe some high school jobs. And my brother, Kevin, actually was teaching at Brandon Hall. He had been there about 13 years. And he said, hey, I think that we may be looking for somebody if you're interested. So he kind of passed my resume along. And once he did that and I kind of stepped on campus, I realized that the devotion to individualized education was really what pulled me in. So Brandon Hall, we cap our class sizes at between 8 and 10 students. All in all, yeah, I know, everyone says that. Wow, that's really small. But I really do get to have a lot of personal relationships with my students, and I get to understand how they learn, how they want to learn, what interests them. Not everybody likes biology.
Darn.
Right. And I'm okay with that. But, you know, some people like to build things, and some people like to design things, and some people like to make movies or create short stories or whatever. And so because I have so few students, I can figure out what each of their little individual strengths are and play to that. And so by the end of my classes, everybody loves biology, but it's not necessarily the content. It's the fact that they got to have a say in their own education. So that really drew me in.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's so important because we're all unique. We all have our individual talents and gifts and desires, and you're right, what makes us tick. And so I love that you're putting the individual stamp on a subject, you know, so you're still teaching biology, excuse me, but you're making it work for each person. Good job.
Right. And the same with environmental science, the same with Science Olympiad, the same with all these things that I do. I try to look at each person as a person and say, okay, what are your strengths? What do you like? And I always want them to have a say. I feel like where education has maybe not been great in the last 20 years is saying, no, you need to sit down, be quiet, learn what I want you to learn. And my philosophy and the philosophy of Brandon Hall really is you should get a say in that. You should get to play if you want to. You should get to make a movie if you want to. You should get to be in theater or take music or play an instrument or take 4 sciences, 5 sciences, 6 sciences if you want to. And so that is really what drives our philosophy.
It sounds like a really progressive school. So tell me, well, first of all, I have 2 questions here. What is the Science Olympiad? That's I'm curious about that. And then the philosophy of Brandon Hall really seems to be kind of on this cutting edge, let's let the students help form their classes and their own education. And so it sounds like it's got a really unique mission and vision. So
absolutely.
Can you start with the Science Olympiad, then go into that?
Right. So for people who don't know what Science Olympiad, it's a science-based competition. So in September, beginning of September, we get a rule book of all the events that we can participate in. So they range from forensics, where you get to go in and solve a crime. I have students creating a robot hand right now. They're building a robot hand. So they've had to learn how to code and design, and there are rules. So it has to fit in this little box and do these tasks. There's one called Wright Stuff, Wright, like the Wright brothers. They're very creative about these names, where you build a plane that you want to be light and be in the air as much as possible, but it has to be powered by a rubber band. And so it's a lot of it's a lot of critical thinking and problem solving. And then there are tests. So when I was in high school, I took the cell biology test and the genetics test and the invasive species test. You know, I took the life science things. Mm-hmm. And so we've got students taking tests on invasive species, on one's called green generation, where the students will kind of talk about and investigate and answer questions on renewable energy. There's an astronomy, there's anatomy and physiology, there's a bridge building competition where basically the kids have to make the lightest bridge possible that will hold the most weight. And so, And so that's really fun because we get to break a lot of things.
Yeah.
That's always really fun. That's how I sold a lot of kids on Science Olympiad this year. This is our first year competing. So we'll be competing next Saturday at the Georgia Perimeter, which I guess is now Georgia State, in Clarkston. And so we're kind of gearing up. We're going to be working tomorrow afternoon, Sunday, and all next week to kind of get ready for competition and see what it's like. So that's going to be really fun and really anxiety-inducing for me, trying to get everybody to where exactly where they're supposed to be and all that stuff. But I kind of thrive on that kind of thing. So.
Wow, that sounds so fun. I mean, you've made science really fun. That's what the key is here. And such a diversity of subjects. Oh my.
I wish I could take credit for that piece of it. Really, the Science Olympiad people do that. but yeah, we've implemented a club period this year in the middle of the school day. So three days a week, students get to meet with different clubs. We have Key Club, which is a service-based club. We have a wellness club where students get to go kind of burn some energy in the gym. We have a science fiction movie club where they watch movies and break them down and talk about the science. We've got a documentary club. We've got National Honor Society meets during that. Our student government meets during that club period. We've got a world issues club. Global issues club. We've got a Spanish club. We've got an American Sign Language club. So it's just really brilliant. And I really give kudos to our Dean of Students and our Dean of Academics for making that work. The feedback from the students has been so positive. And it's another one of those voice and choice kind of things where they get to have control over the stuff they get to do. And it's not just after school trying to make it all work with athletics and this and that. It's in the school day. Everybody does a club and everybody comes together. And maybe you don't go to the same club every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Maybe you get to hang out with different people and do different things. So it's been a really positive experience. And I'm interested to see how it grows in the next couple of years.
So tell us about Brandon Hall. How long has it been in existence and sort of how did this come about? Because it seems like it's really preparing the kids for life and all the different diversity and choices that one would have in life.
Right. Well, Brandon Hall has been a school since 1959. We are right on the Chattahoochee. And so from my classroom.
That's a river, folks.
Yes, that's the river. Sorry. Chattahoochee River. It goes right through the middle of Atlanta. And so we're kind of in this in the middle of this neighborhood. You would kind of never know we're there. But it's about 27 acres of wooded and stone and all this stuff. We tried to keep the architecture with the original summer house. So this guy named Morris Brandon had this summer house. And over the years, it kind of got passed down for people and turned into a school in the late 50s. And originally, the school was founded in order to be a safe haven for students with learning disabilities and troubled pasts and those kind of things, where basically kids who people had given up on, we brought in and said, we don't give up. That's not what we do. And so it's kind of morphed a lot over the years. That's not our concentration anymore. Our concentration now is on embracing things like diversity and celebrating individual strengths. We foster global citizenship and international awareness and international intelligence. We encourage athleticism, integration of the arts, and we really do try to inspire creativity and innovation, and all while preparing kids to go to college and be prepared for the real world. So we really take our mission seriously in that our goal is to get students ready for college and beyond. And how we do that is a little bit different than a lot of other schools. We are immersed in technology. We're a one-to-one school. So for people who don't know what a one-to-one school means, that it means that every student and every teacher has a device. Our teachers and faculty and staff have MacBook Airs and MacBook Pros, and then our students can have whatever they want, but everybody has a device, a laptop in some way. And so we can teach them how to design, and we can teach them how to code, and we can teach them how to use their devices in a way that's productive, which is a challenge every day with teenagers who want to text with each other, and they want to do those things, but once you get them engaged in what you're doing and you show them that actually these devices can do so much more than that, mm-hmm. that stuff kind of goes away. So it's been really fun to integrate that technology.
You open the possibilities to look what someone could become, a web designer, or someone could become a graphic designer, or someone could do research. I mean, I'm just blown away. I have to tell you, obviously, I'm not from this high school generation, that what we have in the palm of our hand, basically, we can find, ask any question in the whole world and find the answer to it right there at our fingertips. So it's just amazing. You're right. These devices are so important to be able to have at their fingertips.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. And even I, when I was in high school, you know, we had computers and we had the internet, but I didn't have a little phone in my pocket that was essentially a computer.
Right.
And I could get onto Google and I could, you know, ask Siri a question, or I could, you know, see what my friends in Germany are up to. And it just blows me away every day, exactly, you know, what they can do and what they choose to do. And a lot of them now have started to play with our 3D printer.
You have one?
Yes. Which it's becoming more and more common in especially independent schools to have at least one 3D printer. Mm-hmm. But once one student kind of embraces the 3D printer, then they all want to play with
yes.
it.
Yes.
And so you just got to get that one kid that designs his own brain or designs his own planet or something like that. And then they kind of all see the possibilities and they all want to do it. And so we've had things like students create robot hands. I had a girl last year create a robot hand, she taught herself how to do the software. She taught herself how to code. She taught herself how to build it all. And it led her to kind of realize that she wants to do biomedical engineering, mm-hmm. That she wants to take her love for science and designing and being creative and apply it to helping people, which has been really cool. She's actually one of our Spark Talk speakers, which we'll kind of get to in a little while. But
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
She's great.
It sounds like you're really giving the kids an opportunity to find themselves. And that's so important. So tell us a little bit about who comes to the school. I'm really interested. You mentioned about global awareness, and do you have students from all over the world, or who's showing up there?
We do. We have students from about 20 or so different countries.
Wow.
So we have students from China, from Japan, from France. We've had a couple of Germans in the last couple of years. We have students from Italy, from Colombia in the past, Mexico. I know I'm forgetting things. Vietnam.
It's okay.
Korea.
You don't have to list all 20.
We have all students from all over the place. And so because of that, we do have a English as a Second Language program where students, kind of depending on their English level, they can take an extra English class and kind of learn nuances, conversation, grammar, those kind of things. But it's also a part of what we do in all of our classes. In any given class, I could have students from three or four different countries. And so one of my goals in class, especially in things like biology and environmental science, is to involve those students and have them tell us about their culture or tell us about the laws in their country, or is this something that you talk about? So, for example, in AP Environmental Science, I have a student from China, and so we're kind of constantly talking about air pollution laws and awareness and those kind of things. And it's really great because the other students get to hear a different perspective, but she also is becoming much more aware of what's happening in China. They are becoming more aware of their own pollution. And so she can kind of take that back home. We're a boarding program. So it's not that students' families have moved. We have students whose families are still in their home country. And so they could get to have this wonderful experience and go back home and say, oh, wow, this is kind of what they're saying. And this is the research I want to do about this, that, and the other. And so we're kind of spreading culture and global awareness, and we celebrated Chinese New Year this year with this big assembly, and so we try to do as much celebration of our diversity as possible.
Oh, that's awesome, and make it relevant, you know, to daily life. And I love that you're teaching the diversity of cultures. That's so important that we get that understanding of how the rest of the world works.
You know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I know your school has something called five intelligences that drive your teaching and learning. So what are they and why those five?
So we have these intelligences that kind of drive our education philosophy and our teaching and learning. And so they are STEAM intelligence, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So we are not a STEM school. We are a STEAM school. We have a wellness intelligence, the idea of taking care of yourself and exercise, eating healthy, understanding your brain health, those kind of things, you know, so not just physical, but how to take care of yourself emotionally and those kind of things. We have an environmental intelligence, looking at the environment around you. What are you doing to make it better? Especially with our campus being on the Chattahoochee River, which for non-Georgians and non-Atlantans, it's very polluted once you get south of Atlanta. So it goes right through the city, and then south of Atlanta, it's pretty disgusting. So with us being on the Chattahoochee, we investigate, especially in environmental science, we investigate things like how are we contributing to the health or the deterioration of the Chattahoochee. We have a service intelligence. All students have a community service requirement to graduate from Brandon Hall. But we also integrate things like service Saturdays and service learning and those kind of things as part of our service intelligence. And then the last one is our global intelligence. And it goes right around with fostering global citizenship. Mm-hmm. So not only do we have students from all around the world that come and are permanent or full-time students at Braden Hall, but over the summer, we invite students from two different schools in China. One is in Suzhou, China, the Suzhou High School. And then the other one is from the World Foreign Language Middle School in Shanghai. And we invite these students to campus to take American history and American literature. And so they get a cross-cultural experience here. And then they also get to go on college trips to American universities. They get to experience local Atlanta. Sometimes they'll go to Chattanooga and some of those a little more local places. And so over the summer, they get to experience a new culture, but then they go back to China for the rest of the year. And so these are dual diploma programs where they get a diploma from Suzhou High School, but they also get or World Foreign Language Middle School, but they also get a diploma from Braden Hall.
Wow. So that's a summer program where the students come from those countries, from China?
Yeah, we do those over the summer.
Wow. That's fantastic. And of course, then I would assume the Braden Hall students interact with them. And so they get the bounty of being able to have that personal contact with people from China.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We do have we run our own summer school as well. So students that attend those summer school classes and faculty who teach those summer school classes get to interact with these students. And get to learn, you know, the learning is always going to go both ways, or that's our goal for learning to go both ways.
Right.
So the reasoning behind these intelligences is to foster well-rounded, students. So the idea of integrating arts into STEM, which we all know is very important. It's very important for us to have science backgrounds and understand technology, especially since the world basically is immersed in technology, engineering and math. But to take those things and then integrate creativity, integrate arts, integrate expression into that is essential in student success. So when students take the idea of arts and creativity and apply it to science, they're going to be able to solve problems much better than if they just memorize things from a textbook. And so this is that is the intelligence that I love more than all the intelligences,
yes.
Although really I integrate all of them into my classroom. But STEAM is kind of where my heart lies. My father is an educational psychologist. So by the age of about 8, I understood that I was about 50% left brain, 50% right brain. And so STEAM
good balance.
right. That's exactly what my father would say. But so I kind of always was creative and loved math and science. I loved photography, but I would break it down into quadrants, or I really loved looking at plants and bacteria and that kind of stuff, but I would see the beauty in all of those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So STEAM really is where my heart lies. And the single greatest thing about Braden Hall and the size of our school is our ability to collaborate with each other as faculty members. So our fine arts chair and theater director, Aaron Greenway, and I have put together many, many projects together where my students will say, well, I want to make a movie and I want to write a script and those kind of things. And so immediately I will email her and say, okay, what do you have this period? How can our kids work together? Mm-hmm. And so she will kind of integrate my student into what she's already teaching in her theater classes. We've wow. also, yeah, it's more of a school-wide initiative this year where every teacher is now enveloped or involved in a STEAM project in some way. So we've got American literature and American history working together about the Civil War. We've got British literature, world history, and biology and theater, which I'm the biology person. We worked together this year to put together a school-wide plague project where we talked
about... Wait, stop. Tell us about that one. Because when you just mentioned, okay, you've got, what did you just say? World history,
British literature.
And biology and theater?
And theater.
Okay, explain that. What are you doing?
So we, back in about September, we all came together and said, what do we all have in common? We all like to work together. We're all people, we like to work together, but what do we have in common? And we realized that at about the end of January, beginning of February, we all covered something to do with bacteria, the plague, something like that. And so our goal with this project was to simulate plague infection in some way. So I know.
You picked something really cool and gruesome. I love it.
Oh, very gruesome. I mean, the plague is just disgusting and it's awesome. So we kind of got together, and what we ended up doing was we all created videos, little 5-6 minute videos in our subject field. So mine was about a little bit about the biology of the plague, but more about population genetics. Why is it that everybody didn't get the plague and didn't die from the plague? So I talked about this mutation. It's a DNA mutation called the Delta 32 mutation. And the mutation basically gives a lack of a receptor on the surface of a T cell. A T cell is really important in fighting off microbes. But the way that the plague infects T cells is it binds to this receptor on the outside of the cell, and it's almost like a lock and key. It puts the key in, and the T cell opens up the door. And so if you don't have that receptor, you can't get the plague.
Pretty interesting. Boy, that's lucky.
Right. So about 20% or so of Europeans have this mutation. But what we have discovered in recent years, that this mutation also prevents HIV infection.
Wow.
And so I made this little 5 or 6 minute video. And I will, what I will do for you is I will send you along the link. So as this goes up, you can put our link to our Google site into it.
Awesome.
So people can go back and watch these videos. But people with this Delta 32 mutation that they've gotten from their ancestors from the 1300s now also are immune to HIV. And so I made a little 6 minute video about that. Our British literature teacher, Mike Ellenboss, made a video about the influences on the plague in literature. And so his students read a short story about the plague. And then he also took little excerpts in his video from 14th century lit, where they emphasized, you know, people are dying in the streets or we're being quarantined. Romeo and Juliet, something I learned that I never knew, that one of the reasons that the friar that's delivering the message from Rome, I think it's from Romeo to Juliet, never got there is because he was being quarantined from the plague.
Wow.
I never knew.
Who knew?
That's amazing. Mike Ellenboss knew. And so he talked about that. Our world history teacher talked about the effects of the plague on history. Mm-hmm. So how we kind of changed the way we looked at medicine and the way we looked at witch doctors and how they came up with these crazy things. I love that I'm learning all this stuff. You know, the fact that our kids got exposed to it too is great, but I love that I get to learn all this stuff too. She told us that one of the popes stood in a ring of fire in order to not get infected with the plague. It worked. Wow. Beautifully. And then our theater teacher looked at theater and plays from that era and the ones that looked at the plague and talked about the plague. And so we then as a group and with the help of another history teacher, our modern history teacher, put together kind of a social game of the plague. So each grade, ninth graders that had one of those teachers, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, they had a king, they had a queen, they had some nobles, they had some clergy, and then they had a bunch of peasants. And then they had what he called the mask of the Black Death. So they each had a patient zero who could go and infect people. So we played a little game of biological warfare with stickers. And the idea was the last kingdom standing wins. So our ninth graders, I believe, ended up winning. for the day. And so they got to infect people. But the feedback I've gotten from my students is I really understand now how quickly it can go from one person to 10 people to everybody. And so that was kind of cool that they get this visual.
Awesome.
They got the history, they got the biology, they got the literature, but then they got this kind of visual game of spreading viruses. And we try to keep it pretty current because of things like, you know, we talk about things like the outbreak of Ebola and swine flu and those kind of things. And so understanding that just because it's a world away doesn't mean it's not relevant to you. Mm-hmm. And so we're bringing in global and we're bringing in wellness and we're bringing in all of those intelligence all while completing what we're calling a STEAM project.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. So basically the students were learning in each of their classes, taking on those individual roles. And then did you get together, you're saying, to play the game, like had a class together or?
Yeah,
looking at logistics on this.
Yeah, we basically let them play throughout the day. It was a regular day of classes, and said, you know, between classes, at lunch, those kind of things are really when the infection should happen. We were trying not to be disruptive in classes, but we did, you know, within other teachers were talking about it, and other teachers were asking their students what they were doing and those kind of things. And so really, by the end of the day, we had 88 students out of about 150 actually actively participating.
Wow.
But by the end of the day, really, it was like a whole school thing, because even the sophomores who were not involved were talking to their other sophomore classmates about what they were doing, what their strategy was, and they better win and all these things. And so it kind of really did become a school-wide fun day, all while learning about the plague.
That's pretty amazing. Thank you for going through that in detail, because that gives me, and I'm sure our listeners, a lot clearer vision of what can be achieved when you cooperate together among the different disciplines. Oh, my.
Yeah. Oh, no. I hope that it comes across in my voice how excited I am.
Yes,
about stuff like this.
And I've got this perpetual grin on my face as we're talking, because to me, this is the way education needs to be in the future. And I love that Brandon Hall is really becoming a model, I think, for is kind of a new educational system that we could have worldwide that actually combines all these different learning elements and opens up the possibilities and the opportunities for the kids to really find who they are and be creative, as you said, and yet use that brain intelligence, that logical mind as well, and put that together. I want to go into Spark, because we're getting well into our show, and tell us a little bit about the Spark Talks and how this came about and what it is and how excited you are about it.
Yes, yet another thing I'm very, very excited about. So Spark Talks is our student speaker initiative that we are starting this year. So Spark stands for Student Passions, Actions, Research, and Knowledge, SPARK. And we're kind of modeling it this year after the TED initiative. So for listeners who are not familiar with the TED initiative, TED Talks are a series of talks that are done in multiple cities where people that are either experts in their fields or very passionate about something get up and they talk. They talk about the things they have done or are doing in their field. And so I really wanted to model it after that, but my goal was to have it really be student-centered. So this year we have seven student talks, and then 4 talks from people who are either experts in their field around the community. And luckily, Gail, you are one of them.
Yes.
So I'm so excited that you're coming and you get to share your passion for ecotourism and for worldwide peace initiatives with our students. But more than that, I'm really excited that our students get to share the things that they love with their colleagues and with their peers. It's very important to me that students understand that just because they are 13, 14, 15, 17 doesn't mean that what they have to say is not important. So we have students talking about biomedical engineering, my student that is talking about biomedical engineering. We have a student talking about his love for scuba diving. We have 2 students talking about their love for business and their desire to be entrepreneurs. We have a student talking about being adopted from Kazakhstan when she was about 18 months old and kind of how difficult that has been for her, but her realization of pushing herself and pushing boundaries. We have two female students talking about the arts and failing before you can succeed, which I think is a really, really important message. Mm-hmm. We have a student talking about how music makes you feel and the idea that music is kind of innate within us, and it, you know, he's going to talk about babies dancing and that kind of stuff, which I just love. And then we have a student also talking about music, but how he goes through the songwriting process, which is really, really cool. And so we've got a really broad range. They're all 11th and 12th graders. And they're going to get up and talk to their peers and people from the community about the things that they love. And then we've got a few people from Atlanta area, some adults that our students will also get to hear speak, but get to network with at lunch. So not only are they listening to speakers, but our students are also going to be the ones in the audience and the ones on stage are all going to be learning about things like professionalism, how to network, how to ask good questions to people who are doing the things that you want to do. And so we're really doing our best to involve the entire community in Spark Talks.
Wow, that sounds awesome. And this is going to be an annual event, you think?
I hope so. We're really hoping to make this an annual thing. Last year, students were nominated. This year, our goal is for students to audition. It's kind of an open call. All 11th and 12th graders who want to audition come in, and then they'll have this summer. So we're hoping to do that by the end of this semester so that they have this summer to kind of start thinking about what they want to talk about and gathering material and those kind of things. We would like to make this an annual event.
And you had mentioned this might be live streamed. Is that a possibility, and where might people find about it and give us the dates of when it's happening?
Yeah, so our goal is to have it live stream on the Brandon Hall Ustream channel. So you go to ustream.com, U-S-T-R-E-A-M, ustream.com, and you just search for Brandon Hall. And so this is going to happen on March 16th of this year, 2016. And we are hoping to live stream between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. with an hour-long break. So there will be like a part one from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And then we will take a break for lunch, and then we will pick up streaming again at 12:30 p.m. to 2 p.m. So this is really an all-day thing, and anyone from the Atlanta community is more than welcome to attend. If you want to visit our website, which is Spark Talks, SparkTalks.bhs.org, or if you go to the brandonhall.org, we are going to be featuring not only this radio broadcast, but the Spark Talks website. And there's a Google form. So if you're interested, it's free and open to the public. Just fill out the Google form. Let us know that you're coming, just so I have enough lunches for everyone. And then feel free to come. Anybody from the Atlanta area or beyond is more than welcome to attend.
Awesome. Wow. That's so exciting. I'm really happy that Brandon Hall has started this, and particularly that the students get to talk about what they really love. You know, so you get to see the diversity of the passions of who people are.
Right.
Yeah. So I want to kind of talk just for a moment. We've got just a few minutes left for you before we go into the peace meditation and talk about peace. So Brandon Hall is so inclusive, diverse, has these five intelligences that involve, you know, global intelligence, environmental responsibility, wellness, service. How do you see this coming under an umbrella of peace? And I know that's a huge question.
It is. That's a very loaded question. I personally see peace and love. To me, those two concepts go hand in hand. If you love the people you're around and the people around you and the things that you're doing, then you will find inner peace. And really, once you find inner peace, then and hopefully, if everyone can find inner peace, then we will see a lot more community peace, global peace. Once you feel good about where you are and what you're doing, then it's a lot easier to help others and say, okay, let me help you find what you love and what you want to do. And so as an educator, that is my mission. Going into every class, every day, my personal mission is to figure out what kids love and help them to apply that to the rest of their lives. And sometimes they know, and sometimes it changes, and that's okay. My love for biology has evolved a lot in the last few years, and I'm finding that inner peace with that as well. So for me, really finding inner peace and knowing what you love and being able to show other people and help other people by doing what you love is really peace to me.
Wow. Awesome. Thank you, Katie. That's very, how can I put it? Philosophical and practical at the same time. So thank you.
I think if you spoke to my dad, he would say, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. So any last words of wisdom do you have for our listeners or want to share before we go into the peace meditation?
Just find what you love and go and do it. I think that too often, I definitely with students see people doing what they think others want them to do. And so they're kind of, well, my mom wants me to do this or my dad wants me to do this. And so my words of advice to students and to adults, and, you know, if you're 65 out there and, you know, do what you love. Find the thing that you love and that you're passionate about, and that will ultimately bring you peace.
Thank you. Very wise words. So thank you, Katie, for being on our Peace Brain show today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So now we're going to go into our Peace Brain meditation, and I invite everyone just to sit back, take a breath. We've learned a lot about education today and about being yourself and the diversity of the human race and all the possibilities here really to create a peaceful world. So I invite you to close your eyes, listen to your breath, and take a breath. And give yourself what I call a grounding cord. And this is an energetic connection between the base of your spine, that last vertebrae, going all the way down to the center of the planet, Mother Earth. I like to envision a tree trunk or a waterfall or sometimes a monkey's tail. But allow yourself to be energetically connected to Mother Earth. And this grounding cord can release everything from your day that doesn't belong to you, and you don't have to know what that is. Everybody else's energy, just let it flow down that grounding cord into Mother Earth. And take a breath. And be present in this moment. Let all your concerns and worries of whatever you're doing right at the moment, just stop for a moment and let all that flow down the grounding cord and be present. And I invite you to create a vision in front of you and imagine a world full of educated people. And not, you know, not people who are stuck up or egotistical, but people who are literate, who are curious, and knowledgeable about the world, who are confident in their being, because that's what education does for each of us. It gives us confidence in who we are, who understand and accept the diversity of life on the planet, and who really are embodying the harmony of everything working together. So imagine that. See the world in front of you with everyone on the planet educated, and that they are in this curiosity, this accepting of the diversity, this really wanting to work in harmony together. And now particularly see the women and girls of the world. And I bring this up because women and girls are not usually educated in this world. And this is something that will change in the future and needs our help and support to change. So imagine that all the women and girls, particularly of the world, are educated. From those living in rural villages to those who live in urban megacities. And then, of course, see all the men and boys educated too, and that they are accepting and promoting the education of women and girls. And take a breath. This brings equality in knowledge, equality in wages, equality in power. For education equals power. And when the educated can participate in decision-making in our society, and each of us contribute with our own creativity and talents, then the world changes for the better. So see that happening. Envision that everyone has an opportunity to exercise their individual talents and creativities, that they actually can put together true democracies where people participate and consult with each other and have a say in what is created. New technologies appear, new innovations. It opens up a whole way of living that complements the earth and all living beings. So as you see this vision in front of you, put it in a clear bubble in front of you and give a grounding cord to that bubble. In other words, attach a string like you would on a balloon. And if you have any doubts or fears or limitations that you particularly feel that could prevent this vision from becoming a reality, let it flow down that grounding cord on that bubble into Mother Earth, and let all those limits and fears be recycled into new energy, and clear the vision off so it can be pure and possible. We are creating peace on earth when we talk about everyone educated. And so take a breath and see this vision. Know that when this does become a reality, that people all over the world will be working in harmony. That it starts at the grassroots, the individual schools around the world, like Brandon Hall and like your school. And now release that bubble out into the universe, send it off to be made and to manifest, and feel the joy in your heart as this happens. And take another breath. Thank yourself for participating in creating education universally around the planet. And I thank you for this. And you can open your eyes, bring yourself back to your chair or wherever you are at the moment. And I want to thank you for tuning in today to the Peace Brain Show. It's been my delight to have Katie Vernon with Brandon Hall today. And of course, you can find out more about Brandon Hall at brandonhall.org or about the Spark Talks that are coming up at sparktalksbhs.org. So, and as usual, if you would like to connect with me, Gail Lash, for a private Alchemy of Peace coaching session, or you want us to conduct a peace master plan for your company or organization to become known as a place of peace, please go to our website, tourismforpeace.com, or you can email me at hello@peacebrain.org. I'm happy to see if our services fit your next steps towards peace. Now, please go forth and activate and achieve your peace brain and put your mark on the World Peace Trails map. Many blessings.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Alchemy of Peace coaching sessions, her Peace Master plans for your business or organization, and her upcoming book, Peace Brain 101. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 2 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern for the Peace Brain Show and your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.